You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. This is Sound Poetry on KTAH 101.9 LP FM. And I would like you all to welcome today Abigail Vizcarra Perez of Tacoma, who has many talents as a writer, but is a very active person in her working life, missionary life, I might say, or ministerial life, spiritual life, right? And poetry itself, I'm sure, fits in with the spiritual endeavors that you have tried out, encountered over your life. Welcome, Abigail.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is great. I remember sitting in conversations about Radio Tacoma before any of the technology was in place, and now to see it's grown into this and I get invited back in this way is amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's quite an interesting idea to also to voice poetry several times a day. I have noticed on YouTube's, for example, even significant pieces by poets that sometimes there's even 17,000 hits on it. But then in the YouTube list on the side, there's somebody who says, half an hour to tell you everything you want to know about body language, and there's 4 million hits on that one. So poetry doesn't seem always to get the attention, but we're trying to give it a try. And so we'd love you to read one of your poems to get us going, get our aesthetic juices going, okay?
Sure. I decided I want to read this first one because it's about movement. And while we're sheltering in place, I think it's important to remember that the world keeps turning. And so does all of the natural sort of flora and fauna that make it possible for us to have our lives. This poem is called Migration. An entire species of beast forms one dark cloud, storming on piquant hooves across the prairie fallow plain, heaving against breathing earthen breast. Echoes of the monarchs, a wisdom in the wings, sings meconium into venation structure, fluctuating with a sensitivity to conditions. Nothing more than an interest. She heard inner rest at the frequency which these, alas, open rhythmic, the same blink and gentle gesture, inviting validation, down to those whose song of brine and breach swims northward, flirting with birds above and airily carried across the mesquite arenas by drunken flap and mishap. And only after climbing clouds, stumbling over secret currents, the light on gray mock muddle huddled between the pages of blue eucalyptus notes to lay a cheek against a stem, nod or bow gratitude. In keeping with those who dare to cool a flushed face against the spine of a lover. Fin rise, ache from the tightened chest, and migrate when the sunlit curiosity of compassion cannot keep quiet.
Very expressive. I like the pace of your reading. That was giving full expression to phrases, sometimes individual words, which often can be spoken in such swiftness that a reader doesn't sort of notice that. And of course,
No one will notice the form, the interesting form of that, but I would urge people to go to Abigail's blog site called Every Skinny Tree at Blogspot, right, .com, and notice the unusual form and punctuation and so forth, which I think visually is part of the experimental nature of some of that poetry that I saw in your site. You like to experiment, do you not?
I love experiment. I'm beginning to notice that you are sort of like the fortune teller. You see a lot of things about my life in my poems. You know, early on in the COVID response, I was furloughed by Metro Parks, where I was employed and may soon again be, I do not know, no one knows, as the diversity outreach specialist, because I was doing some sort of what we activists call the community organizing for the Parks District, sort of the ears and eyes for the planning department. And taking this role away from me, it was very sweet of my superiors to remind me, you cannot work right now. And I felt as though my voice had been taken away from me. I'm even emotional still talking about it, because the work I was doing was such integrated into my life. And it meant that I could not help people to find a park where they should go for a walk. Or I could not help people if they had a problem with some of the playground equipment that they needed. And it felt all of a sudden like this huge loss. And I decided instead to be optimistic, try and think of the ways my life will change and the things I will learn. And I urged my social media community to think about how we will use this time. So in a lot of ways, every single person has been through this grieving process, and how we will rise out of it is determined by how we spend it. And so I said to people, learn a new language, learn a new skill, see if you can pick up playing the piano or speaking Spanish. And now I look at the poems and the way that you describe the experimentation and the difficult language in them, the sort of beyond the fifth grade vocabulary. And I think it might be really helpful for people to understand that poetry is like learning another language. And so the way we use punctuation and synonyms and rhythm is very different. The way we use the sound of S, or the way we use our mouths, or the way we breathe as we speak it out loud, is not something you're going to hear in your everyday conversations. So it gives you a little bit of a new options. And that's, I learned all of this in studying poetry in the East Bay in near San Francisco, California. I don't fancy myself extremely smart about these things, because I've been with people who use these tools with such alacrity. I would never be able to do that, but I'm grateful that you see how hard I've worked at it.
Well, I think you're a bit humble about that, because I have read many other of your poems, and they all show an interesting working with form, syntax, grammar. Also, the punctuational graphics are quite, in fact, I can't help but think of E.E. Cummings sometimes when I see those double slashes and colons so close to the words, not with a distance from it, you know. So there's sometimes no distancing in your poems. They're very intimate too. Would you like to read another poem to show us something of your great variety?
Sure. Let's see. So the migration is a little dense. It's a little bit difficult to get through. It's not as easy, I guess. So this next one I'll read is called Open Heart. It's a little more like one of those pop songs that you hear on the radio. It's a little easier to access. It's called Open Heart, and it just the idea that we ask of people so many things when we ask them to stay open, to change, and it's not that easy. So here we go. We often forget that we must break open or cut through the rib cage if we wish to access the heart muscle? Can the brawn and bone of one body take the frame of another in hand and render, splinter the line dividing good and evil? The tools are the usual, will and emotion, that snap into human frame and unwind white sinew, as if it were made of twig and strung by twine. In grief, our movements take on the punctuation of partial cadavers, studied by those who knew only the silent science of dissecting widths apart from sight and feeling.
There is again your play with punctuation as a kind of surgery. You are punctuating in a surgical way. See, this is the intriguing part of what I see, that there is this admixture of the graphic punctuation, and yet you use wonderful metaphors of language and punctuation and the syntactical division in your poetic surgery there. It's very visceral to begin with. It sets the mind up for things to come, opening up. And that, I think, is something to really enjoy in that poem, the visceral nature of it. Not too many are used to a surgical operation in the midst of a poem. We've seen it in pictures, fine art, but not so much in that metaphorical way that you have dealt with that poem. Interesting. Your work is intriguing. Yeah.
Thank you.
In the migration, which is full of movement, and as you said before, you would like to encourage people to move, that we shouldn't just in our sheltering sit on our legs all day long, or sit in a right angle to make us pray to chiropractors and whatnot. We've got as much to do. There's much walking to do. There's much movement of the mind that we can do on our feet.
It's funny what you just said. You said make us pray to chiropractors. And this is so funny, the words you described. This is how I see the world. You said pray. We sit on in right angles, make us pray to chiropractors. And I just thought I should ask you, you mean like that's the prayer posture at which we come to our chiropractic God, you know? And then I realized, oh my God, you're just talking about we have to go to the doctor. My life is a little bit, as soon as I overthink things, like those, you know, thought bubbles. My thought bubbles get too big.
Your mind is a bubble. I remember a line that you have. My head is a bubble. One of your lines.
I also think about what you said about the spiritual aspect of my work. And there was a time in my life when I was really struggling with the question of God. And I think now I don't feel myself struggling. I feel myself okay with asking these questions. And so one of the roles that I take in my community is as the parish associate for intercultural ministries at one of the congregations in town. And I think that the thing that's really important to me to say about so many of these poems is that they come from this place of struggling with the limbo I think we're in when we're in a spiritual mind, whether that's in a Buddhist practice or for my Muslim neighbors. And I think that all of us in this space, especially with COVID intersecting with our awareness of the vulnerability of Black lives and Black bodies, then we're in this like, what do we do now kind of space. And I find that's where poetry helps me. We don't have the words. We don't have the language with which to express our grief or our pain or our spiritual growth unless we get really creative and do this work, like do the surgery on our thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think in our solitude, we have also realized that we're pulled down into a simplicity. And it isn't such a difficult thing when you can start from a place that is simpler than the one that you had before, which was activistic, workaholic, and so forth. As you say, they took your work away from you. In America, that sometimes is like they took your being. They took your soul.
But, you remember who is it who wrote Man's Search for Meaning? And it was the people who believed that if they were no longer allowed to practice their profession, that their identities were stolen and they had nothing from, no source from which to draw purpose. I know that book showed up on my coffee table at my house, not by my own doing, but that showed up in our house over this whole situation. You know, one of the things we can control is our response to all of these things. And for me, that means it's staying in conversation with my my poetry deities.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and there you're talking about the man's logotherapy. He had a particular therapy that he called logotherapy, which I think was practiced for some time by psychologists. But here again, the question of, does poetry have therapeutic qualities, do you think?
I think it depends on your relationship to the therapeutic practice. So I think for me, yes, not only in the writing, but in the reading. And that has to do with having a mirror so that I can see that I'm not alone, that I have myself to depend on, and that I have conversation partners who understand what I'm going through.
And some of those don't have to be human beings. They can be birds in a tree.
Definitely.
You have written many poems about birds and animals, as you had in Migration, but birds, the crows, I love that one. Have you got that one handy?
Crow Rise, that's the one you're referring to.
Have you got it?
Yeah, I've got it. You want to hear that one?
Please.
Just for you.
The same pace that you have been reading too, because the language in this one really comes through.
Okay. It's called Crow Rise. Crow rise before the sun speaks. Crows jump out of the locust tree with the thin lines tied to their spindly black ankles and pull the sun out of her warm horizon. As they fly, they converse in encouraging cackles like the souls of aunties, teaching and reaching with their wise black beaks. Caw, calling, cock, craw, creatures come crawling if you must and ride dark wings into the day. The cause draws crushing. Hearts awake to ride the thin red lines and pink stuff scuffling past. The rooftops catch fire briefly, and there is nowhere to light and watch until the flames are high enough above the blaze of fluff and haze.
Music. And the I love the consonants and the alliteration in that one line about the cawing and crawling and black ankles. Great combinations of words and phrases. Yeah, you had so much fun doing that.
Yeah, I did. It was born of this idea that what if it requires that the birds take flight in order for the sun to rise?
Yes, it has to do with the ambience of the sun rising. And there's a setting in the conclusion, is there not? Is there something about the pinking of the sky?
Yeah, I think it's a question of how they cannot stop until they get far enough out. Is this tension of how do you go back to the rooftops if you lit them on fire? Like sometimes the sun is rising is this great moment, and then it means time is passing.
Yes, the flaming quality could be something to ward you off from any further approaching. Yeah, very full of color. And a dark poem, too. Yeah. So you do feel that the music in your poems is so rich at times that I feel that you work hard at that in the lines. Is there editing that you do of that sort to try to make it as vibrant and tuneful as you can?
I don't think of it as work, because this is, I have such a funny way of speaking. My cadence and my word choice and how I, and the way I say the words is a little funny. Whether it's in Spanish or English, I have people all over who tell me, you're not American, are you? Or people, it doesn't matter what country I'm in. And sometimes I can clean it up really good, and I can sound exactly like I want to sound, you know, like just the typical accent, like a newscaster, like somebody on NPR, you know, everyone can understand what I'm saying. And then even if I get my accent right, I choose a word or a story that seems just inaccessible. So the poetry is one place where I don't have to clean up my act, and it feels really helpful. But it's also a place where I can kind of say really mean stuff and actually say how I really feel. And
have you got some accusatory poetry?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Because sometimes I'm so angry. And it's like if someone is ready to hear about themselves, we say, I'm going to tell you about yourself, right? If someone's ready to hear the thing they did wrong, they might see that this poem is about them doing the wrong thing. And if they're not, they'll be like, oh, I don't know what that poem is about. Okay, well, it wasn't for you then. the one that I love.
Hard enough.
The one that's about, I am so, so concerned for my homeless neighbors, for my neighbors who are experiencing housing instability, who are at the nexus of the all of these things gone wrong with housing costs, and it's terrible. Well, there was this one moment downtown across the street from the library, there was a piece of property, and someone decided they didn't want people camping there anymore and brought in a bunch of gigantic rocks. It's just tone deaf and strange. And I was, at the time, I was meeting with a group of people who were meeting in an office space across the street every single week, and we watched the progression of this property. And we just could not believe, why would you throw rocks at people who are experiencing homelessness? Like, literally, that's expensive. Just do something different. And so I wrote this poem about that because I didn't know what to do. Nobody knows what to do for or with. And so people just do too. They do things to our neighbors. So this one is called Neighbor. The city rock collection, an installation. Boulders in a nest of rose bushes and thorn shrub appears in the usual grassy patches, once held down by crows and cackling human bodies, fidgeting with rolling papers and radio dials. Wrapping in the respite of sunshine and branches. The silhouette, an echo of Cascadian skyline, falling and rising in curves and points at flashes of mockery. A landscape crushed by the albatross landing of stones thrown at the already stoned. A traveling carnival of attempt interrupts the green horizon and tragic monument to misspent intent. From amidst the parable of bramble on edge rises an idea. We are all rolling and smoking and high, looking down on smokestack and barge. The whole story tells itself, our reflection in the signs of the deaf economy. An unyielding and aloof parabola, obvious in the geography of rocks and hard-won graces.
Wow. Is this a recent image that actually happened in front of you?
This happened probably in 2015 or 16. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it did. It did. Watching it all go down, that's what we saw. And in fact, Lucas and Geraldo put together the map. There's a map of poems. I don't know if it's still available or alive, but it was poets reading poems about the different locations. And yeah, mine was one of them. Mm-hmm. I got lucky.
Yes, Luke was one of our early interviews too. Yes, he's very active in helping people get their poetry expressed and also delivered, yes, in odd places, yes. And he, I think, was the one that referred you to us. And your imagery there is heavy and rocky. Yeah, it's definitely got some weight to it with big questions. Why do such things occur? Mm-hmm. So you have, that was social commentary in some respect. Well, what poetry hasn't got a political slant to it when you really want to think about it? Yeah, even the crows they're creatures of sociability, behave better than we do sometimes. So yeah. Read us yet another poem, please. This is so good to hear.
You mentioned before there are so many things that I do, and I think a lot of this is owed to my family because I come from two worlds, really. My mother's family is Midwestern in origin, and my father's family is from Mexico, and before that, from the Basque region. You cannot see it on the radio, but my nose will tell you. I have a very Basque region. In the Pyrenees, we have large noses and large hearts. Anyway.
And a strange language, too. A strange language. An anomalous language of the Basque, yes.
Yes. So that explains that part of my life. But it's really from...
Where were you born?
I was born in Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska.
So one of your poems told about it.
Did it?
Yes. In one of the years of your blog site, I came across that, but I wasn't so sure you were being autobiographical in it.
And I've lived a lot of different places too. I have moved on average every year of my life since 1996. And so that means I've seen a lot of cities and a lot of roads. I credit my grandfather and my grandmother, my abuelitos, Paula and Manuel Perez, for helping me to understand how important it is to learn as much as I can about all the things I like, and find out from that what I love. And so they never said to me, oh, poetry, that's goofing around. No, my grandfather, instead, he would buy little paperback copies of W.H. Auden and like slip them to me. They did all these great things and just, you know, wanted to show us the world. And so there is a poem I wrote for my grandfather when my grandmother died. It's called The Laughter Lessons. Once upon a time, there was a beautiful painting, a scene of seven flowers waiting in the grassy sea. And I, the youngest, not yet a face open to the sky, jostling against the cautious movements of family. Listening to the sounds others cannot hear, one voice wrapped me in its white skin with its cracked hands, held my cheek to its chest, a covered cage where she kept her heart, safely returned from exile. The round pink child flower resting against the powder flush and steel feeling bones, listening to the sounds of the ancient souls hiding there, hearing the ageless sounds of home and learning them by heart. Knife blades slices through purple onion and thump the boards, teaching her heart how to pound. Rice and water scrape the bottom of the pot, demonstrating a perfect whisper. The flat iron on cotton and steam, the art of the sigh, salt inside its shaker, instruction on silence. A measuring spoon digging into the deep of coffee grounds gives growling instructions. At last it is safe to open enough in splashing water against a petaline flesh. Her favorite lesson, the sound of laughter.
Laughter is so important, yes. And that is something we must remember too during these times.
Oh my gosh, did you know John Updike wrote a poem about his hot chocolate getting cold?
Oh no.
Yes.
What a sad, sad thing. We should laugh about one.
Well, it's not unlike the poem about the plums, right?
Yes, that's right. That was a good one.
This is a great apology.
That was so sensuous a poem. That, yeah. Well,
okay, I have to go, but I'm going to leave you with one more poem.
Good, do that. Okay. Yes, we'd like to hear, and you're recording, are you, Steve?
I am.
Good, that's what we want. Another recording, please.
Okay, this one is because we just were talking about crows. I'm going to read you this one because I really like it. But I think it's also a little bit about what it's like when we feel trapped by the stories around us or by the circumstances around us and a little bit hopeless, but we are going to make it. It's called Birdsong Story. Stories beating at invisible boundaries like birds against the window. And I wait, wishing the bird would break the glass, even if it meant the body and wings entered torn and bloody, because perhaps then we will lift it from the ground, hold it gently, and love its soft body, knowing if we do this, it will sing again.
Oh, you've my despair. You've taken my despair with that one. That's wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun.
It was. Thank you very much. This is Sound Poetry. I'm your host, David Gilmore, and we've been entertained and delighted by Abigail Vizcarra Perez with so many wonderful poems. Thank you so much. It was great.
Well, thank you. This is fun.